All right, ready to go. So again, I want to say thanks to you guys for tuning in again. This is just another way of our member solutions package to help people in their schools, and I enjoy doing this. Right now by me in New York City, it's a gorgeous, gorgeous day, so it kind of ties into some of the things that we'll talk about, because there are things right now that we're going to talk about called with retention. And, you know, we've always heard the analogy about, you know, plugging the holes in the bucket, or, you know, shutting the back door and not letting people come in the front door and walk out the back door. Or, you know, the analogy of the bucket is, you know, as people are coming in, they're filling the bucket, but you have holes, so they're pouring out the bottom. We've heard all these really great sayings, but sometimes we really don't realize what, you know, retention is and what it really involves. Like, for instance, I just had a lunch appointment with a friend of mine, and we spoke about retention. And initially, he said he had great retention in his school when he had a small school of 30 to 50 students. But as he started to grow, it was harder for him to track the people and actually see that he was losing students. And, you know, you find out a month later that this young boy just left the school. You didn't even recognize that he was gone or realize that he was gone until it's so far gone. So we talk about all the different things about retention, but we also think that they're not just – there's not just one item that makes retention you grow in your school. But the whole key to this is to understand first what retention is all about. For instance, if we have 100 students in our school and we had 100% retention, we'd have 100 students at the end of the year. Now, most of the time that doesn't happen. The problem where we get confused is we have students coming in the door and it looks like our numbers are not going down and we're not really tracking what students are quitting. So, for instance, if we start in January and we had 100 students to start and we had 2 months of, you know, students coming in and we signed up 40 new members, we should, in essence, at 100% retention, have 140 students. But if at month two, you know, February, we look at our student base and we have 100 students still, somehow we lost those 20 students. Now, they could be lost out of new students, old students. It's hard to tell, and that's what we have to track. We should know actively what students are quitting, what rank they're quitting at, what age they're quitting at, whether they're male or female, you know, young boy or young girl, because all of these things are very much specific unto themselves. Like, for instance, Melody is the actual expert on age-specific curriculums, and she'll talk continuously about what a child, a 3 to 5 year old, is capable of, and a 5 to 6 year old, and a 7 to 8 year old, and a 9 to 14 year old, and what kids like and teenagers like, and then what adults like and what keeps them motivated, excited, and training in our schools. So sometimes we don't track that enough. When we look at our students, we go, well, we lost 20 students in the last 2 months, but we don't know why. And it could be a myriad of different reasons. It could be all these different reasons that are going to give us the answers as to what we should do about our retention. It could be our curriculum. It could be our classes, the way they're taught. It could be the instructor who's teaching. It could be anything that goes on within the school, the time segment of when the class is being taught, the days that the classes are available to take. These are all things that are so important with retention. So many people think retention is about exciting classes. And really, that is a small portion, or a fairly good portion is the exciting classes. But it's not the only thing that matters in a school. Many times we forget that, and we look at it and say, well, we have some problems, but it must be the classes. It must be the teacher. It could be a number of different things. So before I go into my list of things that I want to recommend, I will ask anybody right now if you guys want to unmute yourself and ask some quick questions. And we're going to have to make sure you guys monitor your phones and you mute yourself. So everybody unmute themselves. And any quick questions so far on anything that I said, because then I'll step into it a little deeper. Anybody there?
Yeah, what I found is I just recently changed my class pattern of schedules. Just because we were full on every class, and I found a lot of people going to a lot of extra classes, and then getting people starting to get burned out because they were going to too many classes.
Right.
So what I did was I restructured the class to get it more balanced. And you always have a few that are unhappy because they want to do all the classes, so you try to help them out that way.
Mm-hmm.
But what I found was now all of a sudden, now that I have two beginner classes back to back, that you kind of got a dumping sensation where all of a sudden those classes starting to be a little bit low again.
Right.
And you know, and I think a lot of it's people getting used to the new schedule and that kind of stuff. So.
Okay.
Well,
I do agree that, you know, that you need to always continually adjust your schedule and revamp it for the amount of students that you have.
Mm-hmm.
You know, for instance, in my early days, you know, I didn't have hardly any brown belts and purple and brown and black belts. Nowadays, I just had a test on this past Sunday where I promoted 22 people to black belts at one shot. And we have about 75 active training black belts in our one, you know, school. So I had to make up a whole entire schedule just for black belts. And, you know, and then I had to make up a schedule for the younger black belts, the teen black belts, and the adult black belts. So there's always going to be that part. And this all ties directly into retention. Because, again, talking to my friend this afternoon, a lot of what goes on, you know, a lot of us claim to be a black belt school, and then we find out later on that we're really not a black belt school because we don't promote black belts. And our excuses sometimes, we cover ourselves by saying, well, people just weren't ready or they didn't make it. But the real key is to get people to black belt and have them to be quality black belts without just giving belts away. So in my school, it's about 5 years to black belt. And we have all these systems in effect that keep them motivated, and I'll go over a bunch of those. But, again, it's not just exciting classes. It's just like you said, it's class schedule. It's spreading it out, you know, giving them more options. So one thing I do suggest highly against is to let people come unlimited, unless they're paying for an unlimited program. I wouldn't just allow them to train as much as they'd like at any time that they would like, because you will get them to burn out. And what will happen, too, is there's no benefit to it. You want to make sure that if they're in an unlimited program that they know that and that they're paying for an unlimited program. So you might want to have a few different program options. One of them at a basic 2 day a week, one of them with maybe 3 days a week, one of them with maybe unlimited. So that's one thing. I think that's good, though, that you're doing that, but you should watch that as far as burnout. You should only allow them to come to certain classes. Any other last questions, a quick question before I move on?
Sir.
Yes.
Yes, this is Juan Carlos Navam from Rio, Texas.
How are you?
Fine, thank you, sir. One question. There's so many different ways to keep track of the retention. There's so many retention formulas.
Right.
What do you recommend us? Like something, I don't know, easy. Something.
Well, in Marshallsoft and on UBuild, there's going to be some things on there for retention, which is going to be fantastic. I also personally, we use Marshallsoft actively in our schools, but we also have a card system, which is actually a maybe 4x6 index card in a file box that has their attendance on it. And we also do some great retention things as far as attendance, where we'll do perfect attendance awards. But I would keep a hard copy, because you pull them, it takes about 3 minutes in the beginning of the class to pull it and check them off and mark them in. But at the same time, you look and see their trends. You could say, hey, Joey, I haven't seen you in 2 weeks. What happened? And he says, oh, I had my tonsils taken out. You flip the card over, you write it on the back that I had, you know, he had his tonsils taken out. Next time, you know, you find out that he's not there, you look at it again, you say, oh, is everything okay? Yeah, I know you had your tonsils taken out. And they'll go, no, everything's fine. I've just been busy with homework. You know, and you make a little note so that you have an active idea of what's going on with the students, and then you have to follow trends. And right then and there, you can address it. It doesn't have to be a phone call, although I do recommend phone calls. But it's a good way to track your attendance. And it's a simple, hard copy way. So it works really well. Does that answer your question?
Yes, sir. Thank you.
My pleasure. Okay, let me jump into some of the tips.
Alan, before you do, I'm sorry. We had a lot of people come onto the call after the fact, so I just want to remind everyone to hit *6 and mute yourself while Ali speaking.
Thanks, Joanne. Okay, great. So I'm going to go over, I have a list of things that we sent out in our weekly, and I'm going to quickly go over a few of them, and then I'll stop. I'll go like one or two or three at a time, and then I'll stop and I'll ask questions, because sometimes the questions let me elaborate on what I'm talking about. So the first tip that I would say would be invest the time in finding out why students have left your school. I would call all your former students and ask why they left. Some of them won't want to talk to you. Some of them will. If they like you and they left on good terms, they're going to give you their honest feedback, and they're going to take the time to speak to you. Do not be afraid to hear negative comments. It's important. I mean, assure the people that they are not going to offend you in any way, that, in fact, what they tell you will help make your school better. And don't forget to offer them a free month, too. So, like, you know, at the same time say, oh, I'd love to get you back in. Maybe I could give you a free month or $150 off the program. But calling all these former students will open up a whole new world of information for you. It's going to help you so much as far as the understanding of what went on, schedule changes, I don't know. It could be anything. It could be down to people didn't like the one teacher that you had working, and they all quit because he was terrible with little ninjas, and then they find out that he's gone, and the next teacher's coming in that they really like. They may all come back. So it's really, really important to actually poll your students. Find out, you know, why they left. Find out the former students, you know, that quit, why they left. Find out the people who are leaving, why they're leaving. And don't just take, you know, lame excuses, because a lot of people will give them to you because they don't want to hurt your feelings or they don't want to really address the problems. So you may want to really try to dig and make sure that you let them know that they're not going to offend you in any way and that you really, really want their honest opinion so it could help you. So the first one is investing the time to find out why your students left the school to begin with. Number two, I have research your stats and find out when that they're leaving. So you need to look at your curriculum as a possible reason and find out if there's any areas of frustration or boredom built into your program. For instance, we have a 3 to 5 year old curriculum and a 5 to 8 year old curriculum called our Little and Mighty Ninja, and then we have a youth curriculum, and then we have an adult curriculum. Pretty much the adult curriculum is what is a major curriculum, and then we watered it down all the way down to little ninjas. And we're able to tell how people are and how they're reacting based on when they quit and what age they are, because each child quits at a different level. Each child may have a different issue. Each person may have a different issue. Each, you know, sex, whether it be a male or female, may have problems. For instance, if we teach grappling at a yellow belt level and we find that all our adult women are quitting at yellow belt level because they're very uncomfortable with grappling, that may be something that you might want to adjust, maybe move it back in your curriculum when they're a little bit more used to being with you. For instance, in my school, years and years ago, we had this one particular kata, a purple belt kata, which is two levels before black, for bow staff, and the kata seemed and appeared to be really long. And people would get to that level, it was a sticking point, and they'd get very frustrated, and a lot of people would quit. Also, we find that in our school that there's a major turnover from the teenage kids to going to the adult class. When they train in the adult class, they get frustrated because in the beginning, they don't want to train with the little kids, the teenagers, but they definitely don't want to train with the adults. They want to step it up a bit, but they don't want to have total seriousness where they're responsible to act like adults. And this is real, real, real important. So these are things that we've analyzed based on our curriculum, and we found with slight adjustments, adding in striping, adding in more regular testing, and also adding in other things that would help them get through, like their sticking points, like half an hour or 15-minute private lessons at their convenience. These are all the things that we did to increase our retention. Then our third thing, on number three, I want to be clear on this, is you have to institute processes to reach your students and former students as well. These are things that will contribute to the growth of your school. For instance, you could get a bunch of different things in effect, such as newsletters. They could be e-newsletters, or they could be a hard copy regular mail newsletter. You could also put your website with a section just for parents, a section for students, a prospect section. Advertise your website. Send out weekly emails with little tips, motivational tips, positive quotes, things of that nature. Do things that are gonna bring the students in a little bit more to feel like they're a part of things. I know that's one thing that I lack in my martial art training with my Japanese teacher. I love him to death, and I train with him whenever I can. I travel to Japan. I go to seminars around the country. But for all the months that I'm not with him, I wish that there was a more regular contact. I just wish that there was a newsletter that I was getting that would give me little tidbits of information that I could practice or understand, and anything that brings me in closer to the school. So those are the first three tips, and then I'll open up again for questions on that, and then I'll move forward a little bit more. So any quick questions on the first three tips?
Hey, Alex.
Yes.
Well, this is Mike Brooks in Connecticut.
Hey, Mike.
Got a quick one. When you started talking about why are students quitting, one of the things that came to mind that I'm hearing a lot now, and maybe other people are hearing it, is I'm quitting because we don't like doing anything in the summer.
Right.
You know, and these are people that may or may not come back, and you know, we all know that, you know, when they quit, their chances of coming back aren't as great as if they would stick with it.
Absolutely.
So any advice on how to attack that, you know?
Well, there's two things that I would definitely suggest, and I hear this all the time as well, and there are those people that do leave, and they're just summer people, and they spend their summer on the beach, which is 7 months of hanging out and doing nothing, in my opinion, you know, or 6 months of hanging out and doing nothing. I totally recommend that you, first off, make sure that people are in yearly agreements and they understand that if they stop, they have to continually pay. But at the same time, you could credit them back. But I would really educate them on the fact that even if they came once a week to maintain that skill, it's still better than stopping entirely. So I always encourage the parents to say, you know, it's just like, that's why it's so difficult for a child to go back to school after having the whole summer off. The few kids that really enjoy going back to school are special. It's the majority of kids that they'll basically, they'll be bored, they'll be tired, they'll be lazy, and now they got to get into a whole new routine. So it's constantly working them into an idea of learning how to have a routine and then taking the time off, and then they have to get used to the program again. So that's why I try to encourage and educate parents on that. Does that answer your question?
Yeah. You know, I got another part of that. You know, when you say 1 year, most of our students are on 1 year, except for the Little Dragon.
Okay.
You give them the choice between 6 months and a year.
Okay.
So you got a lot of people who, what I get a lot is, you know what, we'd sign up again because he wants to do it, you know, we want to do it for the next 3 months, but we're going to be gone 3 months, a month or two after that, so we're not going to sign up at all. What would you?
So in other words, they're going to sign up for a 3 months, and then they won't because, or they're going to sign up for a year, and they won't because they're going to be off.
No, they're with our Little Dragons. Most of them are on 6 month terms.
Yeah.
Okay, that was our decision we made to do 6 month terms.
Yeah, that's why I don't do 6 month agreements because you know I try to say I only do a 3 month agreement. And that's a one-time-only kind of thing. They can only do a three-month agreement one time, and after they've done it, they can't do it again. They have to get into yearly. Because, you know, I look at it like this, relationships, and everybody, this is kind of like a funny little scenario, but if you were in a relationship and you know, you got married at the altar and the priest said to you, in 3 months we'll review this to see if you want to do it, and, you know, that would be amazing. Most people would every 3 months review whether things are going well for them. And then they would make their decision based on whether things are going well for them. And they wouldn't make the decision on the lessons and the benefits and the commitment. Because people don't even, you know, that's why there's 50% divorce rate these days, because commitment to them, it outweighs the benefits. And if the benefit is not there and the commitment is there, people will just end up leaving the relationship. And that's the same thing with martial arts. If people are in a martial art program and they don't see the benefits readily there for the, you know, and you know that they go through cycles that they may not be feeling it, then they're going to quit. So every time you give them a chance to re-quit or quit again, they're going to do it.
Sure.
So I would suggest maybe getting rid of the 6 month and only going with a 3 month trial and then yearlies only.
Well, that's a tough one. I mean, for our, you know, we made the decision to go with the 6 months for that.
Right.
For that, only for that age group because it's so
right.
young. But
well, that's when you commit kids. I have a 5-year-old. I would commit her before I would commit a 12-year-old because she doesn't make the choices in the family. I do. She only does what I say. I don't know why you would do that. Parents say, you know, I don't know if I want to commit my son. It's not because they don't want the kid to be committed. They're afraid of the commitment themselves. And whether it be an adult program or a child program, it's the one that they're afraid of the commitment.
Well, let me get more specific. I don't want to waste too much more time. But what would you do if you had somebody coming off their year term right now and they said,
"Who is that?
Hello?
I'm here."
What would you do? You had somebody coming off their year term right now, and they said, you know what, we can't sign up for another year right now. We will in 6 months because we're going to be whatever reason. Can we just sign up for, say, 3 months now and then come back in December?
Well, normally what I would do is I would sign them up for the full year and then tell them that they would be credited the time that they lost. So, like, for instance, if they have a full year and they're going to take off for 2 months in the summer, they would pay the entire agreement for the full year, but they would be credited for that period of time that they lost.
I'd like to talk to you about that
money.
Offline. If you know,
yeah.
I'd like
yeah,
to
let's do that. We'll talk a little bit more on that. Anybody else? Any other questions? None? Okay, let me go on to, I'm going to go on to my next three tips.
Okay, I'm going to interject one more time. We have people come on again after the fact, so I want everybody to hit star 6 to mute themselves so that Alex can continue to speak.
I'm sorry, Joanne, because next time I'll make sure that doesn't happen again and I go in the right
way. Oh, no, that's okay. I hear the beeping, so I know people are coming on as you're talking, so I just wanted to make sure that they know.
So now, another thing that I would talk about as far as retention would be, our number four one would be community events. And when I say community events, this is any event that you would like to do that's free of charge. These events may include a parent show, a re-grand opening or anniversary parties, special seminars. All of those things should be designed to build rapport within our community and our students. a specialty seminar might be on, I don't know, if you get a notice in the mail home from one of the schools and it says that there was a predator in the area, they notice a white van, be on the lookout, then you might want to do a child abduction seminar. If you notice that, you know, it could be on, I don't know, a trend in kids quitting school, you might want to do something on goal setting. Or it could be on anything that's going to help people in the community, meditation seminar, stress relief, anything of that effect, anything that you could get some free press on, anything that you could be doing to build rapport within your community and your students. And community events are really, you don't realize it, but if you don't do them, they're really a big, big retention tool. Because what it does is it helps people to feel a part of community. They feel a sense of family. And they're less likely to quit or pull their children out when they feel connected, when other people they know, friends, family members, you know, that are in the school, they're less likely to leave. Another tip, number five on my list, is put together events that are give you synergy in your school. You need to create an environment of goodwill. You know, this ties into the community events, but this is more towards just your students, and this would be more like a beach day, family picnics, a movie night, a potluck dinner, free of charge. Everybody just brings their own special sample food that they make, they're famous for, their cheesecake or whatever it may be. And these are ways for the parents to meet each other. It also helps them with carpooling. If the parents know each other and they're going to be a little bit more involved with each other, they're less likely to quit if their friend that they made at the school is, you know, the mother meets another friend and they made a friend and they actually go out for coffee while their kids are training or they get to talk and they do play dates together. This creates a bond between students. And students don't want to leave that because, it, you know, it creates this whole entire family environment. The next one is stay in touch with the students and the parents. And this is so, so important. Make sure that you communicate with them, you know, communicate with them regularly, either by phone or by email or by regular mail. And this is imperative to the growth of the school. Many times we get caught up in the effort of advertising and signing up new students, and we see new students and think that we're gaining, you know, growth and our school is going getting bigger, but we lose sight, and that's where the holes in the buckets become. You know, we have to stay in contact with our client base regularly, at least once or twice a week, maybe once or twice every 2 weeks, but that's really, you know, the least. You want to keep a pulse on what they're feeling to find out if they're unhappy, if there are any problems with an event that you ran, if, you know, you see that a class is not being taught, you know, to their standards. This, to me, is the most important action that you could take. You know, a simple phone call is often just as efficient as, you know, a meeting in, you know, in the lobby. And I honestly believe that if you actually sit with somebody and talk to them face-to-face or actually speak to them on the telephone, it's better than just a quick hi-bye in the lobby as they're dropping off or picking up a kid because they won't address certain issues or they won't talk to you honestly. We're in the middle of, you know, a speedy drop-off or pickup or, you know, they have other parents around to hear them. I think it's important sometimes for us to actually set up an appointment if someone's having a hard time. Give them a free private lesson, write a We Miss You card, do We Miss You calls, contact all your loyal students and just tell them that, you know, you like that you think that they're great and they're doing a phenomenal job. It doesn't have to be only with the students that are on their way out the door. It should be with everybody. So we should be sending out 10 to 20 cards a week, blank cards that you just write on, "Dear Johnny, I saw your front kick the other day. You did a fantastic job. You need to stick with the program and keep on going because you're going to be one of my best black belts ever." And calling up a person just to let them know how good they're doing, rather than calling them up when they haven't made it to class only. Calling them up for just for a upgrade appointment or a renewal appointment. I think it would be easier, much easier to get to talk to these people if you were calling just to give them a little bit of feedback. Positive feedback or, you know, any feedback would work as long as you're taking the time to call them up and, you know, make sure you're in contact. And I'm a big believer on, you know, sending out emails also. So if you have your email database, I would without a doubt pull certain names and just write them a little quick personal letter. It could even be a generic letter, but I would write the letter so that they get it and they could actually, you know, they say, "Wow, sensei or, you know, my instructor is thinking of me." And that's really about it. I stay in contact at least once to twice a week on emails regularly. And we also have our staff call a huge amount of people on a regular basis. So anyway, right now I'll ask questions. Any questions on those three tips that I just gave? Anybody there?
Hi, this is Chris from Washington.
Hi, Chris. How are you?
Pretty good. What do you think about actually going to, like, kids' events and kind of giving your support there. You think that really helps out too?
I think there's no doubt in that it would absolutely help. The only thing is I wonder at how many of those you could actually do. You know, like I used to be able to do that. Like, for instance, I used to be able to go to my black belt parties. After I gave them their black belt, they'd have a huge party afterwards.
Uh-huh.
Now I just had 22 black belts tests on one day. I couldn't even go to more than one party. So as you grow, it might be difficult, but
yeah,
I think it's a great idea.
I'm pretty small now, so it's pretty...
So if you could do it now, the only thing I do warn you on is that eventually people are going to get used to that, then they're going to wonder why, as you grow, why you're not doing it anymore.
Yeah, that's true.
So be real careful about that. That's like when I used to teach my classes. I had 8 classes to 10 classes a week. I'd teach them all. Now we teach 68 classes, and the old people say, you used to teach all the classes, and you don't anymore. I go, well, we have 60 more classes than I used to. So it becomes difficult. So just be careful, but it's a great idea.
All right. Thanks.
You're welcome. Anyone else?
Hello?
Yes. Anybody else?
Hello?
Oh, yeah, I can hear you.
Oh, Jerry Fontenot is here.
Hey, how are you?
Hey there, sir. Just to give you a little flashback of when I was running successful operations. We used to always have the Black Bull party at the school itself.
Yes.
They used to work out pretty well, you know, turning the lights, camera, and action, so we just continued partying for about 2 or 3 hours. And that was basically every 3 months a big bash. So that's the way we did it. Instead of having the students themselves have their own private party, we had a big party afterwards. It worked out well.
I actually thought about that, and I thought that was great, and I approached people, but we had 23 people with different ideas on how they wanted to celebrate with their families and so on. So I am going to try. I would like to try to do a big event, and I think that's a great thing. Any community event like that is a big, huge retention booster.
Yeah. Well, what I also did with that was because having access to a lot of the entertainers, it actually became a show that night. So we had MCs, we had breaking, you know, we had all the big hoopla. I mean, it was a little different, because it ended up being like a quarterly big bash, you know, almost like a media event, and I always did have the local media there also. So it was a little different, but I had the benefit of being in New York, so I took advantage of that.
That's great, though. I love it. I think that's a great idea, and I would recommend if people could do that to definitely do what you just said. That's awesome.
Thank you.
Thank you, sir.
Okay. Alan, this is Matt Hayes calling from Baltimore, Maryland.
How are you, sir?
All right. Do you have a system outside of the 246 that you maintain telephone contact with your students with?
Absolutely. Well, we don't just do 246 week calls. We do 246 810 week calls.
Okay.
So we go all the way out to 10 weeks, and we have a full system entirely set up just for that. And as a premium member on my Taking It to the Next Level website, takingittothenextlevel.com, you get that entire system, which is a 10-week system, and it has bullet points of what to ask for, a full script of what to say, and when to ask for referrals, and so on and so forth. So, yeah, it's a pretty intense program. But, yes, I would definitely, if I were you, do 2-4-6-week calls and regularly do them. And at the same time that you're doing them, ask all the questions, the right questions. Ask for referrals. Ask for any problems or issues that people may have. Whatever it may be, you need to be asking for it on a regular basis.
What about outside of 10 weeks? Do you have a program for that?
Outside of the 10 weeks, we continue with our We Miss You calls, and we continue with our spot calls just to say hello, and we also send out cards. Like I said, most of my people have to send out 10 to 20 cards per week just to different members every single week, cycle through another person. So within a month or a month and a half, we get to every one of our students, letting them know that we care about them and so on. And then we also have the appointment dialer that I use from I got from Member Solutions, APS, where we'll send out a call every single, I don't know, 2 weeks we'll send out a call to our entire database, just letting them know on our events, what's going on, congratulating the new black belts that got promoted, letting them know about tournaments and promotion dates and so on. So they'll dial our entire database and let everyone know. And I'm also doing the emails as well.
Okay, so maybe I can contact Joanne about that dialer.
Absolutely. Definitely the dialer is a good thing to do. And also, if I were you, I'd try to, on my Taking It to the Next Level site, just some information on that as well in the free section.
Okay, sir. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Good question. Maybe you could get on a one-on-one. Everybody here on the phone conference has options to be on a one-on-one conversation with myself, asking any questions that you want, or Melody Schumann. We're available to you guys, you know, throughout the month, and we could sit and go over your particular ideas.
I'll definitely set that up.
That'll be great. I look forward to talking to you.
Thank you, sir.
Any other questions for anybody?
Yeah, Ali?
Yes.
What do you think about keeping track of the parents' dates of birth and their anniversary date?
Love it. I would definitely think any information that you could get that will make people see you as someone who cares would be great. I remember reading the book, How to Win Friends and Influence People, and one of the presidents, I forget who it was big on birthdays. He met a new person, he asked them their birthday, and he'd write it down. And he forever sent out birthday cards. He'd send out thousands and thousands of birthday cards a year to people. And I think it's one of the best things you could ever do, because people just know that you're thinking of them. I think that anything you could do, they open it up and go, wow, since they remember my birthday. And for a mom to go, wow, I can't believe my son's teacher remembered our anniversary. You know, I think that's phenomenal. It just is a little bit more work, but anything that you do above and beyond will help you be that much more connected with your students. We do birthday cards every single month. So we send it out to our entire staff, probably about, I don't know, about 300 or 400 of them a month.
All right.
So it's a definite positive. I love the idea. I think it's great.
Good deal.
Yeah. And anybody else? Okay. Let me move on to one last tip, and then we'll go over some other questions. But I want to kind of step back just a little to my number six on my weekly email was staying in touch with students. So far, if we think back what we talked about email, we talked about birthday cards, we talked about 2-4-6 week calls, we talked about we miss you calls, we talked about just a drop call where you'll call out of the blue just to say that Johnny did a great job. I also have a thing that we call cruising the lobby, you know, like we're out there and we're looking to talk to parents. You know, sometimes I don't even get dressed in my gi and I just hang out with the parents and chat. And I find out that it's just amazing what you'll find out when you're on their level. When you're in your black belt with your uniform on, you know, people tend to talk to you a little bit differently than if you were in clothes. And for some reason that persona just brings out this kind of either respect or fear or whatever they may feel about it. But being out in the lobby just talking to parents, you get a lot of information. And then you'll find out, you know, they'll tell you things that you might not have found out by not being there. So sometimes you just got to be out there just chatting. And then also sometimes you need to ask the right questions. I wrote an article about maybe, I don't know, 4 months ago called Opening Up a Can of Worms. We tend to not ask the questions we're afraid to get the answers to. You know, if somebody is not happy, we want to know why they're not happy. We tend to try to fluff over it. And, you know, we need to know exactly how they're feeling, because if they let us know that the bathroom isn't clean and it makes them sick, we need to know that we got to fix that. Sometimes if we don't ask the right questions and say, are you happy with everything, or what are you unhappy with, what could we, in a perfect world, what could we improve on, that is what's going to make our school that much better. And so we need to ask those questions. Like I said, opening up a can of worms sometimes is really going to help us improve our retention. Okay, so moving on to the next thing. Of course, we talk about teaching exciting classes. Everyone says that, you know, my classes are really, really exciting. I also want to point out, as Melly Schumann says, there are certain things that we may think are exciting to ourselves or maybe an adult class or a teen class that's totally an issue or a problem to a 3- or 5-year-old or a 6- to 7-year-old. For instance, there are certain things that kids could do at certain ages, their ability. That's why the age-specific curriculums are working so well. So, for instance, like in a 3- and 4-year-old class, you may not want to have those kids running backwards and, you know, jumping sideways and doing a lot of hand-eye coordination drills and saying things and doing things at the same time. Then, you know, if you have that class, a class of kids that are mixed together, for instance, if you have a 3- to 8-year-old group, those 8-year-olds are going to react differently, and they're not going to want to do certain things that the 5-year-olds may do, and they may get embarrassed at a different level. The 8-year-old kids may feel funny if they're put on the spot or they're out in front as a demonstrator versus the 3-year-old or 4-year-old who loves that. They love to run out in front of a class, and they love to punch and kick because it makes them feel important. But an 8-year-old is a little bit more self-conscious. They don't want to feel important. Well, they do want to feel important, but they don't want to be out front because they're thinking, if everybody thinks that they're great, they're going to be mad at them because they're not great. There are a lot of things that go on in their heads. So we have to analyze a little bit more about our breakdown of how we run our classes and what we do in our classes. And I normally always break my class. If I have a 1-hour class or a 30-minute class, I always break it up into 3 segments. The first segment would be the warm-ups. This could be like stretching or exercises. Then the second portion of the class would be the curriculum. And this is where the nuts and the bolts of the class are taught. You know, it could be your kicks, your punches, your wrist locks, your throws, your wrestling, your grappling, your mat work, your rolls and falls, and so on. And it's basically specifically what they need to do to progress in their rank. And then you have your warm down. Now, a warm down doesn't actually have to be on the downward cycle, but it's got to be most of the time it's not actually a warm down, but it could be, you know, more exercises, fun drills, maybe fun activities, games, and even for adults we do games. And, you know, it could, remember not to fill it with fluff, but, because fluff gets boring real fast, but also make sure that they leave, and we follow the three S's, you know, sweating, smiling, and striving for more. So that's how we want to leave our students on a high note. But when we break our, we found that when we broke our classes into three different categories, there's a flow to the class that keeps the energy up, and it keeps them excited on their way out so that they're not going to just leave and go, oh, that was a slow class, or that was a boring class, or I didn't break a sweat that day, or I didn't get to work my muscles that day, or I didn't get to practice my curriculum that day. So I find that an exciting class is not only just, you know, running around and high energy and a lot of yelling and a lot of, you know, high impact kind of stuff, but it's how you break your class down. And then, of course, you need to understand that when you break your classes down, you need to break it down according to age. So, for instance, if you do mix your class student, your student age group of like 4 to 6 year olds or 4 to 8 year olds, it's certain segments of the class you might want to break them off and keep them separate so that those 6 year olds work at a different level than the 3 and 4 year olds do. And if you have teenagers in an adult class, you might want to put the teenagers together to work on teenage-specific items versus adult-specific material. That's why I very rarely keep my teenagers in my adult class just based on the content. You know, there are certain things that I may do and may not do in an adult class, or may say in an adult class that I would never say in a teenage class, like specific scenarios like rape scenarios or mugging scenarios and so on. So I think it's, you know, very, very important that we understand that this is really what retention is all about. All these items that we spoke about are all retention tools. And, you know, we need to pay close attention to those and not just think it's about exciting classes. All right, let me open up. It's 2:40. Let me open up the floor again for a few more questions, and then in 5 minutes we'll do some general questions.
What are you doing? Get in here.
Hello. Anybody, you guys?
About 15.
Anybody else? Any other questions? No? Okay. Any general questions on anything? On just general stuff? Did I lose everybody? Did you guys, did we all drop off the phone?
There are definitely people out there.
I'm here, sir. This is Ahmed Hazel from Baltimore, Maryland again.
How are you, sir? And everybody, just don't feel funny. I mean, any question in general, because the questions, the reason why I could go on forever, if anybody knows me, I could talk for hours at a time without stopping. Joanne will tell you. But I open it up to questions for the specific reason that it creates people to hear other sides of what's going on. It also gives them an idea, and it could open up a whole new realm of things that I could go over with people. So I'm sorry. You continue, sir.
Do you use the rotating curriculum?
Well, I do to a certain extent, but I do it a little bit differently. I don't know about the concept of rotating curriculum that people like will teach numbered kata, let's say, for instance, and it'll be like 1 through 10, and maybe this month they'll teach the 10th kata, next month they'll teach the 3rd, and the following month they'll teach the 4th. I don't know how people could do that. In my system, just specifically because I'm a ninjutsu, jujitsu kind of system, everything in our curriculum from the beginner level to the black belt level is built upon ability. And the reason why I can't teach a black belt level or a brown belt level move is because if they didn't learn their yellow belt level move, it could be quite dangerous to them.
Absolutely.
So I don't teach that idea of a rotating curriculum where anything goes at any time, and I follow this cell kind of structure where I just mix it around. The one thing that I do, though, within my Q level, with the level of, let's say, a white belt level, I will rotate the curriculum in that white belt based on the weeks. So it's not like every single week they're getting the same exact stuff, because that could get quite boring. I'll take whatever their curriculum is, and I'll rotate it continually within that period of time so that they can move around and work on that stuff without it getting bored. But it's also being, you know, we are creating repetition.
Okay, great. Because for me, I'm a Tang Soo Do Hapkido practitioner, and I can't teach Bata Da to a white belt.
Totally
I never understood.
Yeah, I understand that, and that's true. But what you could do is take your brown belt, entire brown belt curriculum, and you could rotate that curriculum, because in our school we have 4 stripes on our brown belt. So that in the first stripe they have to learn X amount of techniques, 2nd, 3rd, and 4th. But we rotate that curriculum that sometimes that 4th stripe person will get a first stripe technique, and the 1st stripe person will get a 4th stripe technique.
Okay.
So we, because we know that within 6-8 months they're going to be getting it all anyway, so sometimes we throw a little bit at them, makes it fun, gives them a little variety, but it's not like they're getting a brown belt technique at white belt level, and I totally agree with you on that point. I don't know how people do that, but it all depends on the severity of the technique. I'm sure.
Alex.
Yes.
What I was thinking about was like a lot of kids want to do games like in the class, but I found that since we have increased number of students all the time, it gets hard just to do the meat and potatoes, you know, the core curriculum of the class. How do you find time, like we do, like maybe we teach the class and the reward is at the end of the class we strive or we do sparring, after sparring, and they want to do some of those other games that we, that we made up. How do you find room in the curriculum to do that?
Well, every single class is, like I said, broken up into those three categories. So if you take an hour-long class, or let's just take a half-an-hour class.
Well, most of our, let's say, our 7 to 12 kids are 45 minutes.
Right. Okay. Let's just use a half-an-hour as an example, and you could break it up this way. But then you would take it into three 10-minute segments if it's a half-an-hour. So the first 10 minutes would be your warm-ups, and you could use – in your warm-ups, you could do games. You know, it doesn't have to be a warm-up necessarily like jumping jack, push-up, sit-up, or stretch. It could be, you know, like we do animal walks with our kids, so they'll run back and forth. And some of my kids are so strong. Like my daughter's 5.5 years old. She could do, you know, push-ups, and she has these big muscles, you know, triceps and everything, all from the animal walks. So I use that as a warm-up and an exercise and a game for them. And then I'll go into my meat and potatoes, which is the curriculum, for, you know, 10, 12, or whatever it is. If some of my classes are an hour long, you know, a half an hour of curriculum. And then I'll go into my warm-downs, which could be games or contests, and I could wrap it around my curriculum. Let's say I was doing front kick, and we were really concentrating on the form of the front kick. Then at the end, we might put them up against the clock as a warm-down exercise. We might have them do as many front kicks as they possibly could do in 15 minutes.
Go back in.
So that way I tie it all together, but I'm still having a very repetitive kind of class. I'm disguising repetition, but at the same time, I'm getting them to recognize that, you know, they're still doing the same thing, but they're having fun at it, and it's not just drill, 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 drill.
Hey, I have a question.
Sure.
Yeah, Jerry Fontenot again.
Yes, sir.
On the last segment on your cool down, and my question is, do you guys go over, I mean, this is something we used to do and we're starting to do again here. We always did the lesson of the day and the week. So
absolutely.
That part of the mental part is part of the cool down or?
Absolutely. Without a doubt, I usually wrap up like, and sometimes I'll do a break in the middle and I'll teach the mental and spiritual lesson right in the middle of class. You know, people are moving really fast, they're sweating, and I'll say, okay, take a seat real quick. Everyone sits in traditional Japanese seiza, and I'll go into some spiritual lesson for 5 minutes or something about, you know, being compassionate or, you know, practicing empathy or whatever. And then I'll go right back into the class and get them going again. And at the end, I'll recap that lesson, or I might at the end just talk about something about doing good deeds or, you know, the power word of the month or whatever it may be.
Well, you know, that's interesting because, you know, I got completely away from doing those things, and, you know, for the last few years I've been running the school with part-time operation, but I want to get back to the six and stiff crews I had before.
Right.
And what you're talking about, we used to call commercial breaks. You know, the kids are hopping and pumping to get a commercial break, and while the commercial break was me going over the lesson of the day, or a segment of it, for maybe 30 seconds or even a minute, and while they were listening, I actually had them in the split, so stretching was relaxing, so they worked on their flexibility. And then I wrapped it up in the end of the class. But so it seems like you're doing something similar to that, and that's why you're so successful.
Yeah, and I love it, and you always have done that, too. You're a really dynamic speaker, and you, like, draw right people into the lesson. You and I are kind of similar in that way. You know, I kind of look at every time that I teach and every one of my instructors teaching as a little mini movie or a mini TV show. You know, people have to be enthralled by your lesson. So many times we go out there, and I walked into school the other day where the people were just doing movements on the floor. The instructor was in the office. I mean, how long do you think those people are going to last? They'll be quitting within, if they're lucky, a year that people will hold on to those students. You have to make each class like a little mini, you know, thriller movie where people are coming in there and leaving with you on a high. That's the way we are in this society we live in. We're very visual. We need to see things and hear things and touch things rather than use our imagination as much as we used to when we were younger.
Well, let me just make one statement here, and Master Garb, Vince and I were talking today. The quantum leap that our member solution has done in recent years is phenomenal. I'm just excited because it reminds me of the beginning days of a lot of operations, but this is the next level, so this is the first, the most progressive operation around, I mean, hands down, and I appreciate you guys for taking the time and effort doing this because it's helping a lot of people, and I appreciate it.
I appreciate you saying all that stuff, too. Any other questions out there?
Yeah, Ali?
Yes.
I came in at the end of one of your sections there. You said something about kids crossing over in their teen years into the adult class.
Yes.
Yeah, can you go over that again, please?
Well, yeah, and I'll give you a little insight on that as well. We just recently started a teen class, just teenagers, like, you know, from like 13 to 15 years old, because our 16-year-olds are trained with the adults.
Mm-hmm.
When we instituted that class, it was amazing how many of the kids, we had a lot of kids that we were losing that were pulled right back in that are so excited about this class, and it was odd to me because, you know, they trained with the kids were like 9, 10, 11, and 12-year-olds on up to, let's say, you know, 15.
Right.
And they, you know, they were, the older kids, the 13 and 14-year-olds, think they get too mature for the little kids. And, you know, little kids giggle and they don't work as hard, so the teenagers get offended. And then, but yet they don't want to be with an adult where it's all serious, serious, serious. Adults are just too serious sometimes. You know, in my class, though, our adults have a blast. They goof around. I'm like a big joker, so... but anyway, I think that the kids, they need to find their niche, and they have to find out where they're most comfortable, where they could feel good about, you know, being with their peers, so to speak.
Got it.
And that's very, very important. And this goes from 3 years old on up to older. That's why, for instance, if you taught a senior class, when I say seniors, I would say more seniors, like not like tournament seniors, 35 and older, but I would say seniors like 55 to 65 years old. Those people are not going to want to be in a class with 40-year-olds.
Right.
Because 40-year-olds could jump around and dance around and throw these high kicks, and they're still in physical shape, but a senior citizen couldn't do stuff that they would do. So we need to understand that we need to block our mentality of what we teach in blocks of what is going to be interesting to the students. We tend to want to always continually put people in our mold. Rather than for us to see that the mold doesn't work, we have to sometimes reach out and mold into what society is already, you know, made up of. Does that make sense?
Yeah, yeah. I just want to make a comment here about the rotating curriculum.
Right.
I mean, we don't have belts or katas in what we do here. But from what I've understood about it, rather than I think what you have to do is to look at the kata involved in, let's say, your first two belts after white belt, and just kind of like make that your beginner material.
Right.
And so somebody might learn the second beginner kata before they learn the first beginner kata, but it's still all considered beginner material.
Right. Now, I agree with that, and then I disagree to a certain extent. Like, I would, and I don't want to ever, because there's a lot of people out there doing rotating curriculum, and if it works for them, that would be great. But I look at it like this. It's almost like saying go into first and second grade and learning second grade material before you learn first grade material. So sometimes, depending on the material, of course, it could be learned, you know, and you could learn it at a certain level, but certain stuff just should be buildable. And that's why I think we fail and we fall short in the martial arts, because we don't teach people the foundation of their art. And what happens is they're continually moving forward and they're not mastering anything. What they're doing is they're just moving from cycle to cycle to cycle,
mm-hmm.
and they tend to forget what they've learned in the past. Because what happens is they move on to the next cell, so to speak, and they learn that. And then they learn it good, and then they move on to the next cell, and they learn that, and they learn it good, but then they're forgetting the stuff that they came before. And you know it's all about progression and practice and repetition, but sometimes there's just so much within our curriculums, it's hard to continually go over the lessons from the past, because you'll be there all day or you'll never get to the lessons in the future, and that's why people get frustrated. In ancient Japan, people just trained, and eventually they became great, but that could have been 20 years later, 15 years later, and it wasn't really about what you could give me. So that's why I think that the rotating curriculum was a good fix to keep people moving forward and moving excited. But it really doesn't benefit sometimes, not all the time, but it doesn't benefit the foundation unless it's taught really well and the instructors are very, very conscious on making sure it gets done and they watch over it.
So this is Chris from Washington State again.
Hey, Chris.
So what you do, do you revisit your black belts? You take them all the way back down to
absolutely
the white belt level again? And
absolutely.
And see if they've forgotten anything?
Well, in before they even get their black belt, they have to go through a 10-week black belt success cycle in order to be able to even test, and they have to revisit everything from white belt all the way back to black belt again, and they continually work that for 10 weeks before they even test or they're even allowed to test.
Yeah.
So, I mean, that's important to build that foundation.
Yeah.
But, again, that's just my personal opinion, and again, I don't know everything. So, I mean, there are people out there that are far better martial artists and businessmen than I am, so I've just found this to work well for me.
Yeah. No, I agree. I'm not a big fan of the rotating curriculum myself. So.
Yeah. So any other people, any comments out there? We have about 8 minutes left. I'm going to end about 3 minutes early today. But anybody else that have any comments or questions?
Well, you have a script on the notes that you've covered today that you can email out?
Well, actually, it went out, and I believe that you have it. It was in your weekly email, and if you don't have it, I think that you could go on the APS site and download the weeklies and also the conference calls. You guys could listen to all previous conference calls and download it in an MP3, burn it onto a disc or a CD and put it in your car. You could listen to it at home on your computer at any time during the night, and it's perfect for you guys. So you got the lessons that people, you know, that NAPMA was giving out. You have them all right here, months and months of information and knowledge.
Yeah, I didn't know you could download those. I've been listening to them, but I didn't know you can download them.
Yeah, I'm almost positive they're PDF, not PDF, they're MP5 downloadable, I believe.
Okay.
I know that some of them are, or they're, if they're not, they're definitely anticipating on doing it because Joe Gallia, and I talked about that, and it was supposedly being done.
Okay, that would be
great.
That
definitely is something we're working on, by the way.
Okay, great. Great. But if you could listen to it, there's a way that you could record it and download it. If you could hear it on your computer, you could put it in a record mode on your computer on one of the media players, and you could record it.
Right. I got you. Thanks.
Yeah, my pleasure. Any other people?
Yes, sir.
Yes, sir.
Yes. The new program that you built, who's the person to talk to? I'm with BPS.
You could speak to Joanne.
Yeah, sir. Give me a call, and I'll get you in touch with either someone from sales or with our training and development team, and we'll give you a demo.
So what's your phone, Joanne? You're in the... are you with Member Solutions?
Yes, and in fact, I'll give everyone my number in case they need to reach me. It's a direct toll-free line.
Okay.
It's 888-851-1255.
Okay.
Okay, and any last questions on I'll wrap it up with one last question, then I'll do a quick wrap-up. Okay, so anyway, I want to thank everybody for being on today. The weekly emails, please try to read them. I think they're pretty powerful. Melody has some great reports. We have some guest speaker, I believe, is Tommy Lee. He'll be on this month as well on a conference call. Melody's coming up to another conference call. Also, then Melody also has some great weekly reports, you know, that are just phenomenal. So take advantage of that, guys. And I really believe that you should take advantage of the one-on-one phone calls. They're free of charge. Member Solutions has stepped up 100%. You can speak to myself or Melody, and if we're not available, you can speak to people at the office, or you can email me anytime. I'm going to give out my email again for all the new people. My email is Renshi, L-I-Ninja. That's R-E-N-S-H-I-L-I-N-I-N-J-A at AOL.com. So it's Renshi, R-E-N-S-H-I-L-I-N-I-N-J-A at AOL.com. And you guys can email me, and I will answer any questions that you have at any time. I don't feel uncomfortable about overwhelming me. I'm on email all the time. I'll take all your questions day after day after day. Do not feel uncomfortable. That's what I'm here for. And the last but not least, I totally recommend everybody to check out our website. Joanne will tell you we're starting to get a really good response. I've taken it to thenextlevel.com. And the Taking It to the Next Level site has a huge amount of free information. Every single month we post new stuff on contracts and contract objections and the EFTs and referral programs and so on. And then also there's a nice premium site that we've been getting a lot of members on that is a business curriculum, and it's month to month set out like as if you were to teach your students, and it pretty much gives you a month to follow exactly what to do and what stuff to institute into systems into your school, and then month two comes along and builds upon that. So over the course of a year, we'll build an entirely powerful foundation for your school with all the systems in effect that you need to use to have a huge operation. And I can only say this because I have 1,200 students and I have 8 schools internationally, and I've taken everything that I've done that I teach to my staff and I've put it up over a 12-month period of time, and then we have multiple levels, level 1, 2, 3, 4, and 5, going from 0 students all the way up to 600 students and in multiple school operations. And you can check all that out on takingittothenextlevel.com. I'm excited to be here with you guys again today. Please email me. I love talking to you guys, and I want to say thanks so much. You have a great day. Joanne, thanks again.
Thanks, Allie. Have a great afternoon.
Take care. Bye-bye.
You're doing a great job, sir.